All right. Hello there. Welcome to Trending Now with Josh Arnold and Rick Moore, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And this is a Friday. Of course, it's a football Friday for us here at MSNU Sports, but it's also Trending Now. And good morning.
Good morning.
What do you got lined up for today?
Well, we're going to talk to Mike Hale, the DPW director in Gloucester, and then also Joe Schellino, the city council president in Gloucester, and get perspective on a number of ongoing issues and endeavors.
Now, the pink elephant in the room, is he going to talk about that?
Probably not.
Are you going to ask him about it?
Haven't decided yet. Don't have it listed, so I
Well, I might. I might ask him a general question, so we'll see. I don't want to.
Not much they can say.
Oh, I understand that. I understand. Of course, we're talking about... let me just turn the music off here. We got a second here. It's on everybody's lips in the city of Gloucester. What's going on with the police chief and another officer who have both have been put on... what do they call that?
Paid administrative leave.
Yeah, paid administrative leave with absolutely no word from City Hall as to why. And the Gloucester Times has, I guess, petitioned whoever it is they need to go to for the Freedom of Information Act to get information about this. And I'm a little disturbed, Josh, that there is no information whatsoever. And it seems to me with public officials, and don't get me wrong, I have great respect for Chief Campanello and his officers. I have no idea what's going on. But the problem is that rumor control is rampant in the city of Gloucester. And it would seem to me it would make much more sense, if that's the right word to use, but it would be more of a service to the citizens of Gloucester as to what's going on, to at least give an idea as to what is being investigated and why.
It's a slippery slope for people in the public sector, and I'll tell you why. If you play the tape back to when other personnel situations have occurred, if a mayor brings that to the city council and says, I'm doing X, Y, Z with such and such a person, the problem with that is that then becomes a document that goes in a personnel folder.
And that has happened many times in the past.
And that's happened, and the problem with that is that a document that's in a personnel folder is not a public document.
But that's not relevant. That's a union problem, an administrative problem within.
No, it's a legal problem. If there's pending legal action or disciplinary action against a person, or you reprimand or suspend somebody, the letter that goes into the file is not a public document.
Fine. So what? That has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. That's a totally separate situation. And to remind our visitors, a long time ago, there were some teachers who were absolutely crucified publicly when they were accused of something. And the accusation came out. In fact, the rumors came out before the accusation actually was made public. And I'm not sure this is an accusation. It's an investigation. There is a difference. There isn't any, as far as we know, there's no criminal investigation, but we don't know. And that's, it bothers me that it's secret. This should not be secret with respect. Now, if there's something, if it's important enough that a mayor suspends a police chief, okay, it would seem to me that the public has a right to know. That's all I'm saying. And whether or not that goes into his file or, there's other stuff with respect to legal issues and his job, that's something else altogether. Public has a right to know. Am I stepping out of bounds here or not?
No, I don't think you're stepping out of bounds. I think that it's just a people, the mayor and some of the city council at this point are walking a tightrope because they're going to be constantly barraged by legal opinions that are telling them to do X. And usually what that is don't say anything. And they'll put a lid on that, whether the Fourth Estate view or the public views that as right or wrong. They're attempting to not misstep and then jeopardize any actions they because of the issue that they have to take
Well, what
later.
About the fact that we read, and I don't know, again, we're getting a second, third hand because it was in the paper, we read that the chief was quoted as saying, I don't know what this is all about. Don't you have a right to know who your accuser is and what he's accusing you of?
In theory, yes, you do, but it's a slippery slope.
No, I don't think it's a slippery slope at all. I think this, you know, if someone, goodness gracious, you see every day DUIs in the newspaper, you see assaults in the newspaper, accused. They're just being accused. Nothing's gone to court yet, but boy, it gets out there. And you know, I know people's jobs have been ruined because of that, and they were never found guilty, and they were never, in some cases, was completely dropped. It was a false charge. But that never gets out there. So that's not right either, don't get me wrong. I mean, that's crazy. I don't know. I have great respect for Chief Campanello and the Gloucester Police, and I have great respect for Mayor Safathia Romeo Taken. I do not like the way that this thing has transpired in the last 2 weeks. I don't like it at all. And when I walk around town, Josh, it bothers me to hear all the things that people are saying. I don't know if they're knowledgeable sayings or not, but all the things that get out there among in the public about Gloucester Police, Gloucester Mayor, the Gloucester Police Chief, and I don't like it. I'd rather know what the hell is going on. But anyway, that's my personal opinion.
Okay.
All right. Okay. And there we go. So we'll get back on track here, and I'll tell you what. I will make a truce. I'll leave it up to you and Councillor Schillino to talk about whatever you want to. And at some point, I have calls out. In fact, I should be seeing the mayor on Monday, and I do have calls out to the chief. And I don't expect them to answer, but I'm pursuing it. So we'll see where it goes. And I hope this thing settles in a really positive way. And I really hope that nothing bad happened. I hope it's just rumor control, because as I said, I have great respect for all involved here. Okay, we will take a break. We'll come back with your first guest, who is
Mike Hale,
who is the Gloucester DPW director. This is Trending Now with Josh Arnold and Rick Moore on MSONewsSports.com. Two football games tonight, and we'll have more on that later on, of course. One on Channel A and one on Channel B, including a Gloucester game. We'll be back.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Roger Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Mike Hale, a DPW director in Gloucester. Mike, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Well, I know you're busy, as always, so I wanted to just weigh in on some of the things you're working on. And I was reading in some of the city council minutes, I think in June of this year, a discussion that you had with the council about roads and how that works and what that process is. And it was a fairly long discussion, so we won't get to it all, but if you could share some of the highlights of things that you've tried to project to the council about how you go about roads and some of the things that you're that you have to deal with. I know there's so many miles of roads, so much of it is highway, so much of it is your jurisdiction. You have issues with public versus private roads and a whole lot.
Sure. There's a fair amount of misinformation on the number of private roads, the city's responsibility to private roads, and how that ties to our public obligation to public roads. And there's been a lot of discussions about, you know, there's more than 50% of the roads in Gloucester are private. Simply not true. There's about 90 miles of public roads in Gloucester and somewhere 20-25 private miles of roads. The city has an obligation to maintain public roads, keep them in good, safe order. we have no obligation to private roads. There are state statutes that allow us to do temporary repairs to private ways, fill a pothole, something along those lines. Repaving of private roads is prohibited. There is an ordinance which the city council has adopted some state enabling legislation that allows us, through a council vote, to pave private ways if funding's available. It's not something that's used often. In my 17 years here, we've only used it a handful of times. There is a couple roads in the queue right now for that, but it does make a very complicated relationship between the abutters of these private roads who may or may not know what their responsibility is, their ward representatives or at-large representatives, and my office. So we've been trying to do a little bit more outreach and letting people know what the responsibilities are, where to find out. You know, people doubt us frequently when we tell them they live in a private way. We refer them back to their deed, and, you know, frankly, you can find it usually within a few inches of a homeowner's signature on their deed, a reference to the private way or references to the rights to the way.
Okay.
So that's been a long discussion. There's still a lot to be discussed about that. And as far as our public obligation, we're all in. We're trying to do a much better job managing our public obligation to roads. I hope people have noticed in the last, 7 to 8 years, we've done a fair amount of paving. We're trying to address all our major loop roads, the ones that we all drive on to get home, whether it's driving home to a private road or a smaller public road. We're almost there. Washington Street we've got a small section of Washington Street under construction now. That'll finish up Washington Street from the Rockport Town Line to the railroad tracks downtown. And we've done other roads, Farrington Avenue, Eastern Avenue, really trying to address those. And that's something that by not focusing as much on the private roads, we can really focus our efforts on these public ways.
One of the things I've noticed, first of all, I compliment you on your roads work. The city streets are clean. It's nice and it's refreshing to drive down, whether it's Washington Street or many of the other streets, and how well kept they are. And I know the plantings group and the other groups are doing their share in a lot, too. One of the things that strikes me is the work that you folks have done with sidewalks. And it's nice to see the granite or the curbing put back as opposed to the bituminous concrete curbing that, had a life expectancy of maybe a couple of years or until some big truck ran into it, and then it all broke down from there.
Absolutely. And there are a number of city agencies working on pedestrian safety, and that's tied directly to these sidewalk programs. Community Development has been working on the Safe and Accessible Streets program. They also help fund, through some grant money, some isolated sidewalk work in neighborhoods that qualify for these grants. We did some work on Maplewood Ave this past spring. Well, Maplewood Ave has long since been a troubled area for the conditions of the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. We have multiple curb cuts, and the sidewalks take a beating from people driving through them to the property, parking on them, and just snow clearing. So, and again, the public works money itself, money we get from our state Chapter 90 money, which is really the only money I have to work with for road repairs, including sidewalks. And we often get asked, well, how do we pick and choose which sidewalk projects we do? We really look for streets that have no future utility work on them, meaning the water's done, the sewer's done. We coordinate our efforts as best we can with National Grid Gas for any to have them excavate ahead of our work. So if we're doing work on a street replacing sidewalks, we pretty much know that there's no need to come back in a year or two or, up to 5 years and excavate those sidewalks and, not put it back into a condition that anyone would expect it to. So we're working hard. There's been a lot of sidewalk work done in the city, and we have more planned.
Great. Now, the Beverly and Salem have deployed, I guess, used some money, and I'm guessing it might not be Chapter 90 money, but it's for downtown improvements, but sidewalk repair, but making them cut so to allow handicap traffic and on board and off board. Is that money that's also available to Gloucester, or we don't know?
Well, again, I'm not sure. I know I can speak to Salem and Beverly. They have frequented the TIP program through DOT.
Yeah.
It's a transportation improvement program, and the TIP projects they're complicated projects as far as timing goes.
Okay.
I know Salem. They have a whole department that works on those specifically. I'm not sure about Beverly. We looked at a TIP program for Washington Street from the Rotary inbound towards the Legion.
Yeah.
I spent as much in plans on submissions on the TIP program as I did on replacing the sidewalks.
Okay.
From Friendly's to the train station.
Okay.
So, you know, you look at the economy of, you know, do we want to spend our money on planning and then have the state construct it for us, or we'd be better served to act on our own and, you know, spend less money and
put it into the product on our schedule,
yeah. So to speak.
Now, the building inspector, Bill Sanborn, had sent a memo to the mayor about Fuller School and a need to board it up, and that's in process. Can you comment at all about that?
Sure. Well, Fuller's been vacant since I took over as public works director here. I think the same year that I came in, those children in that school were redistricted to the other elementary schools in the city. Other than the school administration, which occupied a small wing, and Cape Ann Symphony, who occupied the auditorium, the building's had no use. Whenever there's a building that has no use, it deteriorates very quickly. Heat's turned down and or off. Has certainly been turned off in the last few years. Power's been turned off. So the building is truly just a vacant building. And there's an attractiveness to vacant buildings from those who may want to enter for either purposes that aren't good or looking for shelter or just curiosity. So when you have a building that has no power, it's dark when it's dark, and that's dark both for the people in it and also police who may be responding to an incident that may be happening there. The building inspector looked at the situation and said, you know, this needs to be treated as a vacant facility, and the building code says it needs to be made secure. Locking a door doesn't secure a building in a situation like this where glass could be broken and entry could be gained through those measures or prying a door open that's kind of hidden from the public's view. So this past spring, he ordered Public Works to treat it as a vacant building and board it up accordingly. We had a vendor come in. We boarded up the whole first floor, windows and doors, to prevent access that's should be considered prohibitive, but obviously without it being boarded, it wasn't. There were people entering the facility, causing damage. You know, it was basically vandalism.
Okay.
And there was some thought, perhaps people even, you know, spending the night in that building.
Okay. Gloucester Ave Breezy Point pumping stations are getting some repairs and some upgrades. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. The city has 29 wastewater pump stations. These pump stations are generally at low points in the city that help move the sewer from neighborhoods to bigger pump stations and eventually to the wastewater treatment facility on Essex Avenue. 29 citywide. We have one new one on Commercial Street that was built during the Commercial Street Infrastructure Program. So other than that, you have 28 wastewater pumping stations of varying age. Some as early as, you know, 2003, 2004, and some date back to the 30s. They've had some repair over the years, but there's certainly a fair amount of moving parts in these facilities, and they all need routine maintenance for sure. Breezy Point, Gloucester Ave, Gloucester Ave being a much older one than Breezy Point, different style pump stations, both in need of some major capital at this point. So we're looking at just, you know, $1.5 million plus or minus of repairs on those two facilities. That's another phase of pump station work. We also have some pump station work to a federal grant taking place up in the Blackburn Industrial Park.
Okay.
These will, they're needed. these repairs will last many years and will allow us to take a look at our other pump stations, so the other 25, and put them on a schedule for capital improvements and some routine maintenance.
Sure. Now, lost in all the discussion about the opening of West Parish School, I understood that the actual cost of the project that came in at less than what was anticipated. Is that right?
From the accounting thus far, it would appear that the project is under the anticipated budget as a whole. That's a good project team from the city's project manager, who is an outside agent to the city, to the building committee, which is a combination of city and school employees, wonderful architectural team on the project, and obviously the state as one of the sources of funding for the project. It just was a wonderful project. I'm not sure if you had a chance to get through the school, but if you haven't, you should, because it's a beautiful facility.
So I guess my question is, so if there's money that was, I know that when you borrow money, you have to borrow it under different authorities, and it may be that having been borrowed for school purposes differs than money that you would borrow for road work or, water and sewer infrastructure. Any chance that any residual funding from that could move over to address other DPW pending problems?
I'd probably say more fortunately, any money that's programmed, authorized by council, approved by bond council, the ones who authorize their bonds, projects are very specific. You may be able to, write some loose ends to a borrowing.
Yep.
You say you want to improve streets. Well, what does that mean? It means paving in sidewalks, curbs, maybe drainage. So, those are all directly tied to a street improvement. But certainly the bond authorization for the construction of West Parish School, which included some renovations to some swing space, that's dedicated specifically for that project.
So,
in order to repurpose that money or reprogram that money, it would have to have the authorization of the mayor and the Gloucester City Council, and that would be taken up at a vote to repurpose that funding.
Okay.
I don't think there's any interest in doing it at this point. Certainly if there's a savings from that, it's a bottom line saving.
Going to pay down the debt or something else, yeah.
Yeah, they could say, okay, since we didn't spend it here, why don't you make a request for the balance and a new authorization to be used for something that they find important at the time.
Okay.
We try to program our capital work out in advance, so I'm not going to them with emergency borrows or requests like that.
Water main cleaning linings of portions of Atlantic Road and Farrington Avenue, is that underway, and how's that going?
It is. So cleaning and lining is another way to make a capital improvement on the drinking water system. You can replace drinking water mains. We did that down the Commonwealth Ave Centennial neighborhood. Those are all replaced. They were of a vintage and a quality of main that the only option was to remove and replace. Cleaning and lining, you leave the existing pipe in the ground and you essentially clean out any of the buildup in those pipes that has occurred over the years.
And do you use those robot things that we've seen on in the paper or on TV?
This is a very primitive way.
Okay, yeah.
But they basically have, it looks like two tow trucks on either side of a section of water main, 300 feet apart. And there's an access pit on each end, and they drag these Dremels through the pipe.
Okay.
Different sizes, they slowly increase the size of it. And it scrapes that water main down to bare steel, and then they use almost like you'd see grout sprayed. They drag this grout hose that sprays cement, and then it trowels it smooth through that 300-foot section of water main. So now you have a cement-lined water main.
Wow.
Which is how you'd buy it today. If you bought new ductile-iron water main today, it would come with a cement liner already installed in it. That cement liner inhibits corrosion on the pipe, the heavy metals, iron, manganese that builds up in these pipes. So the water quality improves, the disinfection in the water remains longer, and this is a 75, 80 year, maybe 100 year fix. So as long as these pipes have already been in the ground, we buy that much more time.
That's great.
Going forward. And so we're doing a huge project right now. We're doing Sumner Street and Concord Street today, currently. We're getting ready to start Farrington Avenue and Atlantic Road to Grapevine Road. And then that'll take care of this construction season. Next spring, we'll hit the ground running. We're working on the neighborhoods behind the Friendlies up Washington Street, Riverside, Gloucester Ave, Whittemore, Emerson Avenue. And then we're going to work on the other side, Grove Street and Derby Street. It'll greatly improve the water quality in these neighborhoods. It'll improve the fire flow to all the hydrants. And for, it's probably somewhere about 40% of the cost of actually replacing the water main. So there's huge savings. It's less disruptive to neighborhoods. And essentially, it's the same result in the end.
Do you get a variable or a statistic that says this is on any given day in the summer, this is how much water the city uses versus come Labor Day, how much that water changes and how are we doing there?
So peak season, July, August for the city of Gloucester, our water plants push out somewhere around 5 million gallons of water a day. And that's for all uses. And that's not breaking it down between residential, commercial, irrigation. That's what we produce. That's what's pushed out of the plants. So that's what we assume is being consumed. We drop off, we've probably dropped off a million gallons a day already.
Okay.
At the end of September. And by the holidays, December through January, we're under 3 million gallons a day. So,
okay.
Probably around, 2.4, 2.5 million gallons a day. So we cut our water production in half from summer to midwinter. And that's based on demand. There's no outside use in
okay.
December or limited outside use. A lot of our, the restaurants are slower, the bed and breakfasts, the hotels are slower that time of year. People are just simply using less water in the winter, so we drop off significantly after Labor Day, and it only continues to decrease through the spring. We're still under water restrictions. We've had another dry year. Last year was dry. The last few years have been dry. This year we're probably about 8.5 inches behind our normal precipitation.
So does that mean we're going to have a lot of snow this year?
Well, I don't know. There are those who say if you're going to have a dry fall, maybe you'll have a precipitation-filled winter.
Yeah.
We just haven't really had this, other than 2 years ago we had a fairly snow.
When it snowed winter. Forever, yeah. When we got more snow than Buffalo, yeah.
Yeah, but we're still in a deficit as far as the total precipitation goes. We're still pulling out of our West Gloucester reservoirs. We're going to be there for another 3 or 4 weeks, and then we're going to transition over to East Gloucester reservoirs, which are Goose Cove and Babson Reservoir. Those reservoirs are fairly full right now. So,
good, great.
I think we'll get past that water restriction in the next few weeks.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and certainly always appreciate you taking time out of your really, really busy schedule to share with our listening audience. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Josh. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
Looking for a reliable place to produce your team's uniforms or your business's corporate apparel? Then Sarkisian Sportswear is the place for you. Conveniently located on Route 1 South in Peabody, Mass., Sarkisian Sportswear handles all aspects of your needs, from price quoting to providing visual proofs to production completion. Visit our website, SarkisianSports.com, to view our monthly specials, vendor catalogs, and to request a quote. Remember, Sarkisian Sportswear is the place to go.
Street at Sylvan Street, a great place to eat and drink and meet with and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan, plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest has been with us before, our City Council President from Gloucester, Joe Schellino. Joe, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for inviting me once again, Josh. It's always a pleasure to be on your broadcast.
Lots of things going on in the city, and wondered if you could weigh in on some of them. First, I know that you're just starting the getting through the summer and everything. You passed the budget in June, and you're almost through your first quarter of the fiscal year. Tell us how the things are going on at the council, and maybe you can update us, give us some updates on some of the things that have come before the council.
Well, when we're talking about the budget, I think we're in good shape. I think we're on track, to stay with the budget. In October, the free cash gets certified, and hopefully that we'll have some free cash that we can get a couple of projects done. And we try to do but free cash is just a one-time expense and not a reoccurring expense. And some of it we'll put in the bank and save for a rainy day. And we'll see if we can get a few capital projects done through it. So we're waiting for that news, and so we don't know what that volume, that dollar volume is going to be, but hopefully, there will be something. Yeah.
Now, I noticed in reading some of the council minutes, you folks have been active. I know that whenever you receive money from any source, the city council has to vote to approve that, to accept it, and so forth. But you've been busy in terms of some of the grants or gifts of money that have come your way. State 911 support incentive grant for over $60,000. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, we've got some, they're not professional grant writers, but they're certainly people that know their way around to write in a grant. And one of the biggest grants that we've gotten so far is that it's a scuba and the self-contained breathing apparatus. And that came in. We got a grant for like $350,000.
Yep.
And what that is they're going to supply all the breathing apparatus for the fire department, which is a tremendous assistance to the city because the apparatus that we have now is at the end of its life cycle. And so we were looking at spending that kind of money to replace it all. So that's one of them. We have some wonderful grants going on at Stage 4 Park, and hopefully to remodel that and get it all spiffy for the 400th anniversary. And that's, as people see, they go by the boulevard. That's all Seaport bond money doing that work.
Yeah.
It's like an 80-20 deal. And so progressing forward. But yes, we have generous donors. One fellow donated $20,000 to the veterans services and to help out his fellow veterans. And it seems like every week we seem to be getting a grant or getting. But we work hard at it,
Yeah. I know Tommy LeGrandi had
absolutely he was the instrumental in getting this
FEMA Homeland Security grant.
Yeah. But he found it, he wrote it, and we got it, and so that is a tremendous asset to the city.
There's a Healthy Gloucester program that you guys got like $125,000 for recently. Can you tell us a little bit about that, or
which one?
Healthy Gloucester program.
Oh, the Healthy Gloucester Collaborative. Yeah. We get money for that, and that what that does is anything to do with healthy, whether it be bicycle racks or bike lanes or spending on the parks and that's Steve Winslow, and he works for community development, and Steve Winslow's got a knack also for writing grants and being successful at it. So he's also working on the Stage 4 Park grant, to redo all that, and hopefully we've made it through the first round, and we'll continue on with that. So
I saw something from I think community development about a utility aggregation plan that city's looking at or contemplating. What will that do?
Well, we approved it, and what that does is that and I believe it's through the state. It kind of gives a standard that for alternative energy, whether you have a wind turbine or some kind of deal that you can cut, and supposedly we will get a better rate, in the future because we've done that.
Oh, good, great. And there's a program called Safe and Accessible Streets. What is that about?
Well, that's making the sidewalks handicap accessible, and that's the project that the roundabout and Tally's Corner.
Yeah.
What you're hearing about, that's where those funds would come from.
Okay, great. Classification of the annual burden of taxes, how that's done and everything, that will be coming up on you?
Coming up shortly. Yeah, we'll determine the tax rate.
How does, what do you see on the horizon? It would be pretty much the same?
It's going to be stable,
And that's important to have a sense of stability in terms of attracting business or retaining business, correct?
Right, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, and I think this is going to be the year that we're going to do level for businesses and residential. And so it would be zero, which we've been trying to do for a lot of years.
Good, good. What else is hot on the city council agenda or around town that you feel you can talk to us about?
Well, we just accepted a boat, 20-25 footer, that's going to go to the police, to the harbor master's office. And what that did was they got this boat a few years ago, and harbor master's in need has been sitting on a trailer for a couple of years, and so we're moving forward to bring that to put that into use, which is, it's heated, it's got a fire fire pump, which makes it valuable, and certainly when we have an emergency.
Great.
So that, it's pretty much it. There's a lot of small things going on, but I think we're in good shape, and I believe that the police department is in good shape. They're handling, and when the city's covered, so we're just going to move forward.
Great. You have anything? Oh, okay. We had Mike Kale on just recently, and he talked about the order that the building inspector ordered to had to board up the Fuller School. What is your sense of where that's going? I know that there was a sense of the YMCA was going to have it, and now it looks like that may not be the case. Any more on where?
The mayor's still negotiating.
Okay.
So she hasn't given up on it.
So that's not off the table. It just hasn't happened yet.
Right.
Okay. All right. Very well. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest and filling us in on the council agenda, and we hope to have you back later in the year when we can give us another update.
Thank you, Josh, for having the opportunity to speak to your listeners.
Great. Thank you, Joe.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright Double Hung Insert Window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plastow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
MSONewsSports.com, MSO Radio.
Well, alrighty then. You know, before we wrap it up, short show today, I want to remind our visitors and our people who come here that we have two football games tonight, one more tomorrow. Tonight we'll have on Channel A, it will be Bill Newell and Tim Kearns will be broadcasting from Dr. Deering Stadium in Danvers as Marblehead and Danvers will be squaring off, each 2-0 going into tonight's battle. It should be a terrific game. And then on Channel B, I will be at Newell Stadium in Gloucester, and we'll show Swampscott against Gloucester. Swampscott is 2-0, and Gloucester is 1-1. So that should be a decent game. Swampscott wanting to avenge last year's game, of course. And then tomorrow, one more game. Bill and Tim will be in Beverly, as it will be Peabody at Beverly. That game, I think, is a 1 o'clock start. Both of our games tonight at 7 o'clock with our pregames at 6:30. And, of course, plenty of scores and interviews and highlights and all kinds of good football coverage and sports coverage this weekend on MSO News Sports. Back to turning now with Josh. Josh, I think before we finish, I got to ask you about the crazy season that continues, the venom and the vitriol and the garbage that is spewed from both Democrat and Republican presidential nominees is absolutely gross, but in my opinion. But how do you look at it?
I find it insulting in some ways.
There you go.
Appalling in others. I guess, you know, I want the ad that comes on to say, I'm XYZ person, these are the issues, this is where I stand on them, and this is how my view differs than somebody else. That would be a breath of fresh air. And what you get is a negative ad. So we're going to show the other guy and why he's no good, and the bottom line is, because the other guy, a person, is no good, you should vote for me. That never sells with me.
Well, I think one thing that's different this year from a historical perspective is the proclivity of social media and instantaneous information that comes out across the country, whether it's true or not. And what's fascinating to me is that I think ever since I can remember, I've always considered politicians to be liars during campaigns. They lie. They make false promises, and you just, you know, you shrug it off. But this year, it's been elevated to a new level, and to such an extent that I'm not sure if both parties, but it seems like it's true, both parties have lied so much that they have created alternate histories. And it's fascinating to study this, because they believe what they're telling, apparently. And I guess if you create a lie, who was it who said, I'm not smart enough to lie? Was it Lincoln? I think it was Lincoln. I'm not smart enough to lie, because you get caught up in it. But
ten more lies to get out of it.
And the general public doesn't seem to care. It's just, okay, whichever side we're on, it's it. I don't care what the other side says, does, or promises. It doesn't matter. I'm against them. I'm for my guy, and that's it. And there just isn't any, as you were just saying, there's no elevated discussion at all. There's none.
It's disheartening on so many levels. If you look at, I mean, some of the channels play reruns of the past presidential elections. You listen to Eisenhower, you listen to Reagan, Kennedy, Humphrey, Truman, and it's fascinating to hear and see what they had to say, and it was more substantive.
Yeah, a lot more.
And you know, I disagree with Mr. Nixon because. Okay, well, that's great. At least it puts it out there. Mr. Nixon's over here, Mr. Kennedy's over here, and somewhere you can figure out where you are. All right, but I don't get that. I don't get that kind of debate or that kind of interchange. It's, you know, the less evil person is going to win, and I have to think that the Libertarian ticket and the Green Party ticket they're going to get some votes. And what that does to the election is anybody's guess. You know, how close does it have to be in one of the swing states, whether it's, you know, and this was 11, 12, 14, used to be 14, what they call prime states in terms of the Electoral College. You know, what's in play, what's not in play in terms of blue and red and how that all plays out. I don't know. I've seen some of those maps, but I've also seen some how that's shifted, you know, week to week. I'm wondering if there could be, I mean, it's been how many years since we sent, you know, was it Jackson was the last time it went to the House?
I don't know, it went to the Supreme Court in 01, didn't it?
Well, yeah,
or
but 2000? I mean, but if no president, if neither of the two parties can gain a
plurality,
you know, a plurality of the required for the Electoral College, yeah, then it would be thrust into the House of Representatives.
Oh, I don't think that's going to happen. I think one either Democrat or Republican will win handily. I don't think the Libertarians or the Green Party have any chance at all.
Well, I have not got a handle on the health of the candidates and how much that's real versus how much that's manufactured. And you know, if there's more to it than what's being broadcast, and that comes out, that could change the dynamics of the election. I mean, other presidents have had issues. Roosevelt was in a wheelchair, but we didn't have television, so nobody really knew that. And the press, you know, all the press knew it. The press weren't going to say that. Kennedy supposedly had Addison's disease. That was a hush-hush, you know.
Reagan had Alzheimer's.
Well, yeah, but he was out of office supposedly before.
Well, I don't know about that, but that's my little aside
and,
there.
So, you know, different. Well, but the health issue could end up being an important part.
The health issue.
We don't
know. So what's the health issue? Because social media, and this is it. I'd love to be back in college or teaching this. Social media is absolutely amazing. You get these missives that you see on different aspects of social media, and they have these really official sounding headlines and an official website and so on. And you look at it and you realize it's some nut job's blog on either side. And it comes and people are quoting these guys. You know, well, Billary has. What does she have? She's got Parkinson's or something or other.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Trump has got this, that, and the other thing, and he's 150, you know, but his urologist says he's in great shape and he's got a big whatever. You know, it's like, give me, and then you check the sources, you know, because I do. I check this. I troll social media looking for news tips.
Yeah.
And you check the sources, and they're bloggers. They're just individuals who decide to put something out there, get an official sounding name,
yeah,
and there you go, and make up a headline. So it's incredible, and people are gobbling that up like ice cream and believing it.
Well, there's a phenomenon in electoral politics, the snowball effect, and the idea that, you know, the reason New Hampshire is so important, if you can win New Hampshire in the primaries and you win the first eight or nine, you know, then all the money starts to flow to you and it pushes the other people aside. Social media is rolling. Has its own snowball.
Oh, boy, does it ever.
And it flows in such a way that, you know, it takes people like you, the rest of the Fourth Estate, to dig under and say, wait a minute. the shampoo commercial and the first person lied.
I've got a friend who quotes this stuff, and then I just email him back one line or something. You know, have you looked at this? Do you really understand where this is coming from? And here, you know, this is what actually happens. These are the real. This is the real. And this is, and it's like, oh yeah, you're right, but never mind. I don't care. You know, it's okay. So it's fascinating. Social media and whatever that entails, it's absolutely. And the internet is so powerful, and that's the other thing. Many of the things that we have seen, and I guess as another quick aside, and then I'm done. I read that there are certain communications courses and so on. They're studying how Trump uses Twitter, because I guess from what I've read, he's an absolute master of Twitter because he does the three sentences or whatever it is, three topics, and he gets it, what is it, 146 characters?
146, 149 characters, and
yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, and he gets his message in there, and it says everything in these quick machine gun bursts, and it's fascinating. And he is using that to a tremendous advantage.
Well, politicians have learned to do sound bites, and the problem with sound bites is it doesn't tell a whole story. You know, maybe Twitter and Trump's ability there is a natural progression. But
Joe Public doesn't care about the whole story. Just okay, the soundbite is what I want to hear. Good, I can see that in 10 minutes before I'm on my way to work.
We're so ingrained in instant everything.
Absolutely.
That
thank you, Sesame Street.
That we're not going to take the time to sort out the details, and that's what they're banking on.
Absolutely.
That's what they're banking on. And I thought the editorial in today's paper, from a standpoint of I thought what they did is they just rehashed what's already known on the one hand.
Oh, that's it, my radio thing. It drives me crazy.
Okay.
I have an alarm set, and I don't know how to shut it off. It's driving me nuts.
But on the other hand, they didn't tap into the rumor mill or the stuff that's so much about social media, and they just said, this is what we know, and we have a right to know. We believe we have a right to know, and hopefully someone's going to come forward and tell us what's missing.
So Monday is the first debate between Trump and Clinton.
Yes.
All right, that should be fun.
Yeah.
All right, Josh, what do you got? Lined up, or at least things that you are looking at in the future.
I'm talking. I met the president of Wendover Construction the other night at a award ceremony, the annual meeting of Senior Care, in which Mayor Romeo was honored among others. And I'm going to be talking to him, and hopefully have him on the show. It was interesting about some of the. I asked him if he had looked at the hotels that were here 100 years ago when he was developing his design for the new hotel, and he said yes. And so I thought that would be a good topic to chat about. Mary Margaret Moore from the Independent Living Center of North Shore and Cape Ann, I'll be talking with her this afternoon and setting up a time. Paul Crowley, the Executive Director of Greater Lynn Senior Services. Paul Lenzikos, the Executive Director of North Shore Elders, former State Secretary of Elder Affairs, are people I have in the queue to talk to, as well as Barry Weiner and John Bell.
Excellent, excellent. Sounds great. All right, Josh, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, that's Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. I'm Rick Moore. This has been Trending Now on MSONewsports.com.